Welcome to the Creative Play and Podcast Network. Join us as we share our favorite RPGs, one-shot games, tabletop games, reviews, and convention panels. Sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Kelly, aka Trixie from Ragnarok and Roll, assigned to Ragnarok Story, and Tilda Wimblewick from D&D Journey of the 5th Edition. First off, I would just like to say thank you to everyone for listening to our varied adventures, as well as for rating us on iTunes and RPGpodcast.com. If you haven't rated us yet, we would greatly appreciate it if you could. And if you're looking for more ways to support our efforts, we are now on Patreon, a great site where you can help us continue making more podcasts, as well as some special surprises for our patrons. If you can, please look us up at www.patreon.com/cppn. Every little bit helps. And again, thank you for listening.
Oh, look at you, your beautiful complexion. Hello, you're stunning, a marvel. Perfection, look at you, head to toe. Absolutely radiant beyond belief. I'd love to see the cosplays today. Listen, both of you, it's Sunday. You are like, we have our A-plus game today. So good, I'm very impressed, but gorgeous. Hello. All right. So, let me just be all professional for this very serious, authoritative panel about our favourite beverage in the universe, tea. So, right. I am your hostess for this journey, Madame Askew, and I'm so delighted to be with all of you. If you have seen me elsewhere this weekend, it was my doppelganger. She's American, we try not to acknowledge her too often. Could somebody close that back portal for us? Thank you, sir. Excellent. All right, welcome to the actual factual history of tea with me, your hostess, Madame Askew. Now, I want to warn you before we get into this. I don't recommend using this panel as the basis for any scholarly papers or publication. You should not footnote me unless you're talking about comedic interpretations of he, and then by all means, have at it. Welcome, come, have a seat. It is in the vicinity and neighborhood of facts. It is fanciful ruminations on said facts, and I'm very excited to take you on this journey through the millennia, because tea has been with us for a very long time. It's not really an upstart beverage that started in England. I know we've had really good PR on the English front, where we have convinced everyone that we know tea much better than anyone that we conquered or occupied and stole the tea from, that we are the authorities, if you will, and that we know best how to prepare it. But as you will discover, that is a really good PR campaign, covering up a lot of terrible tea drinking habits from earlier periods. We've gotten better, but some people might say we still have some room for improvement, but I digress. Tea is original to Southeast Asia. It just grows wild out there in the world, as bushes just jumping out. And several thousand years ago, people were sort of like, well, you know, I'm not sure what to eat, but we've got this cousin in the village, and he's very willing to eat anything, even if the next day he really regrets it. He does have some strange dreams periodically. We tell him he's communing with the gods, he believes us, and so he's still game. And so we convinced him to eat that plant over there. Turns out, it gives him so much energy the next day, he didn't die. And so we thought, why not? We'll try it too. And so sort of the original consumption of tea, and this continues in some areas of Southeast Asia, is they would take the leaves from the tea bush or the tea tree. They will keep growing from bush to tree, by the way, when untended. We'll just chew it. A bit like people in the American West like to put tobacco in their cheeks, but they were like, tea. and put tea leaves in our cheeks. I don't know if you've ever tried to chew a tea leaf, but it's not really what I find to be the most pleasant experience. So I think that they were desperate for a little perk up in the morning. And you know, if I were living in prehistoric times without access to things like electricity and running water, I too would like a little perk up in the morning. It'd be very hard to get up in the day when I'm like, ooh, you know what, we're going to start the day by making a fire with twigs and trying to find water and hoping that we can forage something enough to live through the day. Rough time, so I suppose chewing tea leaves is an all right alternative if you need to get through that. So they were sort of chewing tea leaves down in the most southeastern part of Asia. And meanwhile, up in what is now China, there's this emperor sort of swanning about, as emperors were wont to do. They had great sleeves, they had really good headwear, they spent a lot of time on their facial topiary, and so they were like, when we're done getting ready, we like to swan through the gardens. And this particular emperor is known as a great scholar. He's a sort of mythopoetic figure at this point. And he's well known for discovering many herbs, many plants, many things, and delivering them on to the future generations. And he's sort of swanning through the garden. He's like, I'm just gonna sit here and drink some hot plain water. Sounds lovely. I think hot plain water will be wonderful. And as he's pondering his bowl of hot plain water and how he's going to drink it hot and straight, a delicate leaf comes floating into the garden and lands in his bowl. And he's like, you know what, I'm gonna drink this leaf water that I have. And he takes a drink of it. He's very fortunate that leaf flying in over the wall was tea. He's like, oh, this is rather good. Goes well with swanning. I think I should tell people about it. Random discovery, absolutely did not have that cousin that I convinced to eat this. See how it worked on him. I tested it on myself, totally fine. Was not talking to those people in Southeast Asia who chew the raw leaves. I discovered it in my garden, in my hot cup of water. And so in Chinese tradition, he is considered to be the mythic origins of tea drinking, and he delivered it unto his subjects, if you will, as one of the many herbs and plants that are beneficiary to your health. And so for a long time, tea was considered to be sort of a health drink, sort of something you did to benefit yourself in China. And the Chinese really created the art of tea making. They started harvesting the tea bushes, planting them into plantations, if you will, and started to develop a process of refining the tea. So you may be aware that there's more than one type of tea. There's not only the classic iced variety of dubious origin that is very charming in the summer, but also there's green tea, very popular right now. Everyone's like, ooh, green tea is so healthy. I'm like, did you know it's exactly the same as black tea? Just prepared differently, but that's fine. One's more oxidized, one's less, I suppose that's different, but they do come from the same plant. So essentially, it's gonna give you the same benefits. Just throwing that out there.
But they taste very different.
They do taste very different. That's because of the preparation method. But they are, fundamentally, they are the same thing. They originate from the same plant. And so the Chinese were like, woo, we've got this plant, but you know, it's like pasta. It's a noodle, but if you do different things to it, it's more fun and jolly. So we want lots of noodles and we want lots of tea. And so some of the ways to create different tea have to do with how you dry the tea. So tea comes off the bush, it's a green leaf, it's just raw and wild. It's like, look at me, I'm a leaf, what are you gonna do with me? You can't contain me. And the Chinese were like, yes, we can. They're gonna hand roll you into shapes. We're going to manipulate you, and then we're going to dry you, sometimes in a basket, sometimes over a fire, sometimes over a smoke full of things, sometimes out in the sun, hanging out, getting a tan. Sometimes we're going to pack you in a little brick and put you in a cave and hope everything goes all right while you ferment. And we're going to do all of these things to you. Oh, I love fermented tea. We're going to talk more about it because it's got a history. It sure does. And so as they were like drawing it, which is how you stop or prolong your oxidation. So white teas, yellow teas are closer to the original leaf off the bush. They're less oxidized, but the darker and sort of grittier and gothier of the teas are like, we got really oxidized, and we're feeling it like age, and we'd like to come and be with you in our tannic ways, and I'm like, ooh, yes, please, I'd like to see you in the morning, too. It's so good. So there's this process of drying them, but then there's the process of shaping them, so you'll find traditional tea comes in like little balls like pearls or rolled in oblong cigar shapes, or all sorts of shapes. And this is just the very great art of shaping your tea leaves. And so this was done by people who were artisans of the craft of tea in China, with, you know, very good skills of rolling baskets. They weren't necessarily rolling every single leaf by a fingertip. That's a bit much, even when you are controlled by a feudal overlord who does not look at you as individual humans with human rights, but has property whom he can make do things, which would be an emperor, by the by. We had them in the western part of the world as well as the eastern part of the world. They were very popular for a long time, the sort of imperial overlord who was like, I own the people. I'm not subject to you, you are subject to me, roll tea leaves. And they were like, if we don't tell him that we're not rolling them single leaf at a time, he'll never know, it will make no difference. Just get the basket, Mildred, and we'll like shuffle it around and look very pretty and be like, I'm going to swan with my tea leaves. And they're like, yes, Emperor, swan with the tea leaves, we have work to do. So they were manipulating these leaves, shaping them with baskets. We ended up with things like oolong, which is a tea I love. Oolong is the pinnacle of the Chinese tea making tradition. It is, you know, it has a bit of a bad reputation in the States, at least, because often it's served historically in this country. It's been served in restaurants that they're making scads of it, and they're just like, cheapest oolong, they don't know, they'll never ask, just put it in that pot, pour it for them, they'll be like, ooh, hot, slightly brown, must be good, I don't know tea. And they're like, that's right, you don't, but you paid for it, good on you. A really good oolong is a magical experience, full of nuance and complexity, and such flavor, from the sweet to the what have I done with my life variety. But my favorite thing about oolong is that it means dragon's tongue. because the leaf unfurls like the tongue of a dragon as it is steeping and brewing and going through what's called the agony of the leaves. I love it because tea is the most goth drink. I don't know if you knew that. But they agonize! And then you drink them, and they're like, yeah, drink our agony, mortals. So when you're just having that cup of tea, just remember, you are drinking delicious suffering. So oolong, dragon's tongue. Now, the Chinese are like, this has been great. We've been doing this for a few hundred years. Very satisfying. We have a very well-developed experience of tea. Also, we control it very closely. People are not allowed to learn our secret trade, secret ways. They didn't have trademarks. They just had imperial decree, where if you came in and you were like, I'm going to steal the knowledge of tea making, they were like, how do you feel about drawing and quartering in depth? They're like, ooh, I didn't want to know that much. We'll just buy it from you. They're like, that's right. You shall buy it from us. Yes, madam.
What's the perfect climate to grow tea in?
I tell you what, let's hold the questions for the end and we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Right? Great. Because it sort of doesn't fit in with the flow right now, but I will remember you, all right?
Okay.
So the Chinese started exporting their tea and they're like, so we want to share our culture and maybe influence, and the emperor's been growing bored. We'd like him to swan other places. And so they were like, what if we reach out these tea tentacles to other regions around us and see if we can also send out soldiers and imperialism with us? And they were like, I don't know, but we'll buy your tea. The Mongols were like, so listen, we see what you're doing and we do want the tea, but also we're going to take over. And they were like, oh no, do the war. And that like helped a little, but ultimately they did just end up succumbing. And the Mongols also took some tea. And you know that fermented tea? Here we go. So the Mongols were like, listen. We're on horseback, right? And we haven't really gotten into this whole saddlebag business. What we like to do is store things under our blankets against the sweaty horse. And it sort of like tenderizes them. How will that work with tea? And the Chinese were like, I don't know. But have fun with that. And they were like, great. So they took these little tea bricks and they stuck them under the horse blankets and like, I'm gonna sit on this all day. I'm gonna sit on that tea on the blanket next to the horse where it's sweaty, and we're gonna ride across the steppes and conquer and pillage. And at the end of the day, we're gonna drink the horse sweat fermented tea. Yeah, that's pu'er. Pu'er developed from horse sweat to bit. Fermented tea to the tea we have today, which is not usually done by horse sweat anymore, right? They're like, listen, the horse sweat, it does give it a little subtle note, a little spiciness, but also a lot of horsiness. And there's the fur, which is so awkward in a cup of tea. So, and we can't get those Mongol horns to tenderize the tea leaves in the same way anymore. They went on to other things. They're like, have you heard of hocking? We like hocks now, not riding around on tea. And so now the tea is shaped into bricks and balls and different beautiful shapes. And then it is stored in caves and fermented that way. That's sort of the original traditional style of pu'er. There's also a more modern style of pu'er where they speed up the process. They use modern cooking techniques to sort of cause that fermentation to happen. No horses, again, very important that we've moved away from that. And there's a bit of a divide in the pu'er world. If you're like, I like a raw pu'er, people are like, ooh. That's like the radical, single malt drinking, you know, very intellectual side of pu'er. And if you're like me and you're like, you know, I like the predictability and the stolidness of a cooked pu'er, they're like, Philistine, but all right. Here you go with your blended malt. Some of us like single malts. I'm like, yeah, I do too when I'm drinking scotch, but when I'm drinking tea, I want a cozy experience. Calm down, right? We can like both things, both the raw and the cooked. It's possible. And then I don't know, can you? I'm like, yes, I can. So anyway, but the important thing, no more horse sweat involved. But that's where it started. And the Chinese are like, good luck. Go forth with your stinky tea. Sounds fun. In the meantime, they were like, we got to get over to Japan with this tea business too, but there's water involved. It's really hard to ride horses across the water. So we're gonna have to pack this onto boats. But you know what? All these leaves take up a lot of space, really heavy. We can't sell as much tea to them either. So what if we dry it, turn it into powder, and convince them to whisk it into a froth and drink that as tea. We can charge them a lot of money for it. And the Japanese were like, sounds jolly. I love this. Bring us the powder tea. We would like to experience the frothiness of tea. They're like, tea frappe. And it became a whole thing. They're very serious about it. The Chinese are like, well, that works strangely well. But did you see how seriously they took it? We were not expecting that. They have an entire ceremony. It's, oh my goodness, like, they are definitely the type A tea drinker. They were like, I would like an A++ extra credit, all right? And they're like, all right, Japan, you can have it. We're gonna have a tea ceremony as well here in China, is sitting down and drinking tea that someone else makes for us for about 5 minutes, no frothing, but you go with your froth. It's lovely. So, you know, you can see how the tea in Asia is sort of spreading and becoming this interesting cultural phenomenon everywhere it goes. It also makes its way into India, where we get this thing called chai. I'm going to pause a moment here. I want to talk to you about chai. I'm going to be a little bit evangelical here for a moment. You need to know something. I need you to know this. The word chai is tea. It means tea. Chai is the word for tea. In Hindu and a variety of other languages in the Indian subcontinent. So for me, my darlings, when you are out in the world and you're like, I would like a chai and I'm going to order it, I would like you to stop there. I would just like a chai and I'm going to order it. Please, my darlings, don't say, I would like a chai tea. When you do that, I weep in my room. And you know, I'm like a little fairy, right? And so as you are asking for chai tea, I am withering ever closer to my mortality. So I need you to just say chai. I would like a chai, just a chai, because you don't need to say I'd like a tea tea, right? Just remember that. So it makes it to India, they're like, ooh, we like this tea business, but you know what? We have a lot of these fabulous spices, and we would like to add them to this tea. And also, we have this thing called milk. And so we're going to boil the tea in the milk and the spices, add some sugar to it, all things that we have, and the Chinese are like, ooh, who's showing us off now? Who's being so extra now? Sugar, spices, your own things that you're adding to our tea. And the Indian subcontinent was like, yeah, China, because they're now anthropomorphized countries that speak to each other. Yeah, also we can grow tea here. And China was like, now hold up a moment. Where's our hegemony if you can grow tea? And they're like, well, I don't know, that's a new problem, not an us problem. We're gonna export this thing called masala chai, which is, that means spicy tea. So masala is spicy, it means spice blend. And so there are lots of spice blends. There are lots of masala chai recipes. But when you are ordering your masala chai, remember you don't need to say spicy masala chai tea. I love you so much, you don't have to do it. You could just be like, I would like masala chai. And I don't need to say latte either, because it should come with the milk, all right? But I will tell you what kind of milk I want, because we live in a modern era, and if you want oat milk, that's fine, all right? No shame in oat milk. If you like it, me, I like the whole milk experience, but I am from the people of Northern Europe. So I have a problem of liking a lot of dairy. It's fine, I can stop anytime I want. So India also has indigenous tea bushes, indigenous tea culture. There is a connection between China and India. All of this has a connection, and it's sort of a wonderful exchange. There's a bit of collaboration. There isn't really that much of a shift of power dynamic. But then the Portuguese are like, hello, we're very keen on colonialism and trade. And the Chinese are like, ooh, that feels a bit dodgy. And they're like, you think we're bad? Wait until you meet the Dutch. And the Dutch are like, hold your horses, wait until you meet England. But the Portuguese are like, we're going to take some tea, and we're going to take it back to Portugal, and we're going to spread the good word of tea. We're going to also take that word with us. It's going to have some shifts linguistically, ultimately arriving from cha to tea, or chai to tea, depending on which direction you go, over water, over land. But you've got cha and chai, and they become tea and tay. So you can follow the transit of tea, actually bilinguistic shift across the globe, and the route that it was traded in, which is very fascinating, and an entire academic paper on its own. So that's why I'm just going to mention it, and then you can Google it for more information. But the Portuguese are like, also, we're going to marry off one of our princesses to one of those kings in England. They're sort of, you know, not our favorite blokes, but they don't like the Spanish, so that's nice, neither do we. And they're willing to marry one of our girls, give us some money, we'll give them some money, there'll be some ships and things back and forth, it'll, you know, royal escapades, and we're gonna send her with a box of tea with her as a dowry. Meanwhile, in England, they're sort of unaware of tea. They're percolating along, if you will, drinking this stuff called coffee. They're drinking coffee. It's a very dark time in our timeline. But you see, we had been conquering and invading and taking over places where they grew the cursed bean. And we were like, well, if we took you over and we're inhabiting your land and seizing your production and your product and your human rights, we might as well enjoy it. So we're gonna take this bean back with us. We're gonna make terrible coffee that we boil forever. It will be so bitter and dark and terrible that we foment a revolution against our king. So at this time, before old James comes in and marries Catherine Braganza with a box of tea, his predecessor ended up being beheaded by some very angry people in England who didn't like the way he was like, I'm your feudal overlord, you're my serfs and you should do what I want. They were like, wait a minute, we've read philosophy and like Voltaire and some nonsense. Well, he was later, but you know, some other philosophers. We hear that we have human rights and also that you should be a servant of the people and have some like boundaries on your power. And he was like, I don't think so. I feel like I'm king, I should do what I want. And they were like, listen, we've got this bloke Cromwell and he says he will lead us towards you with an armed army of people. And he's like, the king's like, you can try, but I've got an army too. And they're like, your army is a bunch of silly fools with really long hair and fancy clothes, and they don't practice. And we're a bunch of bitter, angry, caffeinated people with no choices. And we practice a lot. So they won, and they were very bitter and dour. And so it was a really dark time in which theater was outlawed and you couldn't have any fun and you had to wear a lot of black, but not the good kind. It wasn't the goth era. It was the dour, we don't believe in color era. So there's a difference because goths believe in color. It's just that we don't always want to have it in our lives, but we like it for you. So, you know, his son comes back, you know, the people are like, we didn't really like that, didn't turn out like we thought. We thought we'd get human rights and weekends and like dignity, and instead we got a new kind of dictator who was like, I'm in charge, no fun. And they're like, ooh, at least the king was like, you can have a bit of fun but also suffering. And they're like, I like the fun and suffering. Now all we have is suffering and bitter coffee. And so he comes in, the replacement king, and he's like, you know, my papa was murdered by beheading by people drinking this coffee nonsense. I'm gonna outlaw coffee houses feels bad for me. At the same time, he marries Catherine of Braganza, who shows up with a box of tea that her family got from China. And he's like, I don't know what this is, but let's try this tea business. Let's convince people to drink tea instead of coffee. I don't think they'll kill me if they're drinking tea. It seems more mellow. And so, you know, I think it was one of the Charleses. It was like Charles the One or Charles the Two. I lose track during the English Revolution because they all, the English Civil War, because they all have very similar names. The whole family's like, we have two names, James and Charles, plus numbers. All right, England, be more creative. We're still doing that, by the way. The current king is named Charles. And I was just like, really? That worked out very poorly previously. There was a whole civil war. People died. But all right, go on with you, Charles. So he's not asking me for advice, by the way. We're not on speaking terms. It's fine. Mama did not like me, apparently. It's fine. Anyway, their loss. So we're here. We're in England. He's marrying Catherine Braganza, mostly for the money, but also he gets tea. He's like, I don't know about this. She's like, listen, trust me, have this. He's like, well, I don't know. She's like, you're terrible. Also, can we talk about some of your technique behind closed doors? Very lacking. They did produce, you know, it worked out for them, I suppose. But the most important thing is that box of tea ended up inspiring more tea import. And so the English, who could no longer have their coffee houses, were like, we're going to get it on with this tea nonsense. And the Dutch were across the water, waiting like sirens, and they're like, did you hear? It's not just tulips anymore. Now they want tea. And we have a fleet of ships and a will for capitalism. We're going to start importing tea to England. And England was like, well, I mean, what if we get in partnership? And so we become sort of invested partners in the Dutch East India Company. And we, the royal family, get a bit of profit. And we allow you to import tea and sell it to our people. I know we're servants of the people, but we still kind of own them and we tax them. And so we like to tax the tea consumption too. And meanwhile, the people are like, well, at least we get the theater. And we may not get coffee, but we're going to try this tea nonsense. And they say we can't kill the king anymore, but we can get together in tea houses and talk shady smack about him, which is about as close as we can get. And then it becomes an entire culture of stiff upper lipped, shady, dry, humorous nonsense over tea. But before we got to the shady, dry, humorous nonsense, we had to get to afternoon tea, right? So we've got this tea coming in, and they're in the now tea houses that are like refurbished coffee houses. And in these tea houses, they don't know how to make tea because not one of these blighters has ever talked to anyone in China. They've never been like, maybe we should talk to the people with thousands of years of making tea experience. We're gonna talk to some Dutch guy and let him tell us how to make tea. And he's like, listen, just put it in a big kettle, boil it for 1,000,000 hours, serve it by the cup. And the English tax law was like, if you're going to serve it by the cup, we're going to tax it by the cup. And so we're going to tax it by the fluid quantity. And they're like, oh no, that's a lot of taxation. What if we try selling the leaves to the people? And so to get around some of the tax laws and the tax issues and to like make a little money on their end rather than giving it all to the, you know, royal family and the royal treasury, they're like, let's sell leaves, let's see how that goes, which is really good for us because they were drinking tea that had been boiled within an inch of perdition all day, and they were like, ooh, delicious. So good. Do you remember the coffee? Me too. Love this. It tastes very similarly. Oh, so I'm glad they changed the tax law so we could get at least tea leaves. And so we've got this whole like, oh, we're kind of going to more caffeine experience, and we'd like more and more tea. And into this mix comes the Duchess of Bedford, who's like, I like tea. Also, I'm very wealthy and very fashionable. Also, they won't let me eat dinner until like 9 p.m. at night, and I'm so tired. I don't have luncheon, and I only have breakfast at like 10 a.m., and then I spend all day lounging in my room and getting ready for the ball that I have every night. She's like, you know what, but I'm a duchess. I can do what I like, and what I like is to have a snacky in my boudoir while I'm in my dressing gown, getting ready to go to the ball. And so I'd like everyone to make me some tea and little sandwiches and maybe some biscuits and bring it into my boudoir at like 2 to 4 p.m. And then I'm gonna do that for a couple of hours. And if I like you, I'll invite you into my bedroom and we can have tea together and gossip. Sounds gay, I'm in. But also, all of her friends were like, ooh, I love this. I get really tired and hungry in the afternoon too because my husband says we can't have dinner until 9. And since I have no human rights or dignity, I have to do what he says. It's really hard. And so the countess was like, tea's the way, my darling. If you must despair, at least have tea and sighs in the afternoon. And so the Duchess of Bedford started off the fad of afternoon tea, which here in the States you call high tea. There's a whole thing about that. I could wax rhapsodic, but perhaps I shan't because we don't have that much time left. And I can only rant at you so much. And my main thing I want you to take away from this is that it's masala chai. If you forget everything else and remember that, my work here is done, all right? So the Duchess of Bedford calls her chums in. They're like, ooh, did you get an afternoon invite to tea? And all the cool girls in England are like, I'm a duchess. I'm going to do afternoon tea as well. So the aristocracy's like, I don't know what my wife is doing, but she's in her bedroom all afternoon with her girls. I'm sure they're just pals. Apparently they drink tea. I'm sure they don't do anything else, and they're certainly not talking about us because what would they say? We're delightful. Sure, George, you're fine. So this afternoon tea thing starts to spread, if you will. It starts to stew amongst the aristocracy. It becomes a trend. And then their servants are like, I don't know what they're doing, but they are much perkier afterwards. And they never finish this tray of treats. So I thought I'd have some of this tea business that they're having. And it's way nicer than what we can get boiled down in those vats. In the former tea houses, so it's kind of nice. And I like these little biscuits. And they make us work until midnight and then get up at 4 a.m. and do it all over again. So I'm really into this tea thing as well. But, you know, they couldn't experience that really posh, fancy-dancy afternoon tea. So they developed this idea of tea as a more stolid work-a-day meal as well, which is like tea as in dinner. So in England you have tea, the experience of just having tea and being posh and, you know, not actually sticking your pinky out, but like thinking about it because you're cheeky. And, you know, you're like, ooh, I don't get hungry. I'm too elite for that. And also I have people to get hungry for me. I just drink tea and I deny people a living wage. And so then the servants are like, well, all they give us is tea and bread, but what if we put them together? We can pretend like we have a whole dinner before we go working some more. So you had tea, dinner, tea, fancy dancy. And so you'll find idiomatically in England that people say, oh, it's time for tea, and they mean supper at like 5 or 6 o'clock, and they're going to serve you kidney pie and maybe tea, or maybe they'll just be like, well, we didn't really want tea. How about beer? And then you've got the countess and duchess, and they're like, oh, I'd like tea and a cucumber sani. I'm sure I'll be fine for the next 5 million hours. I only needed cucumbers and a little white bread and a cup of tea. It's all I need to survive. But because I do no work, right? When you're lying around all day, what more do you need than cucumbers? And all of this is happening. They're all starting to drink tea and get really caffeinated and hyped up. And they're like, the only thing keeping us going in this grey weather with this terrible monarchy is the tea. And the Dutch East India Company could not keep up with the demand for tea. They were running out of money to pay for the tea in England. They started taking their silver teapots and their silver tea sets, melting them down, shipping all the silver with the Dutch to China to try and get more tea. And the Chinese were like, this is working out very well for us. We are getting really wealthy on this. But then the English were like, wait a minute. We're running out of money. How do we get our tea? And some bloke was like, Your Majesty, I have an idea. It's very clever, super cheeky. We grow this thing in Afghanistan. Yeah, it's this place we took over, we colonized, we own it now. We steal their products. You know, they're unhappy with us, but it's fine because we're English. And the thing we're stealing from them is opium. And apparently, you thought caffeine was a hook for you. You should try opium. It really gets its claws in, as it were. And so what if we take the opium and we sell that to the Chinese in exchange for the tea? And the Chinese initially were like, I don't know, in moderation seems fine. But then the Portuguese decided to come back into the story and they were like, listen, we found a better way of having opium. And this way, if you prepare it in like pipes and smoke it, it's a lot more potent and more addictive. But our sailors really like it. And historically, it seems to work out for us, although we're not remembered as a big imperial power. So maybe it didn't work out for us. But we're going to teach you how to smoke opium rather than just having a little sniffer as a snack and eating it. And so they got China hooked on opium. And the emperor was like, hey, hey, gentlemen of the West, I'm an emperor, you're a king. I feel like we've got a lot of similarity. I think I own my people, you think you own your people. They're all serfs, they should really do what we want. So why don't we come to a gentleman's agreement? Stop sending me opium and just start sending me money and I'll keep sending you tea. And England was like, no, no, I don't want that. I want to addict you to more opium. And the Emperor of China was like, but no, I forbid it. And England was like, but no, I have guns. And so they went to war. England fought China for the right to addict its people to opium in order to get tea. The English are the bad guys. And they won. They won that war because they had superior arsenal on their boats. They had steam power. And the Chinese were like, we've got steam, but we were doing more productive things with it than blowing things up. What a terrible, rubbishy idea, the English were like, is it? Because we won. And now you have to take the opium. Also, we'd like Shanghai. And we're going to have it. So they made their own port. They took over an area. They created these cantons for sort of the foreign occupying force of the British and other European powers. And China was like, that did not work out very well for us at all. But you know, I'm still angry about it. So they fought a second war. So there were two opium wars. They lost both of them. Set China up for some really bad things and probably a really bad 20th century ultimately. But the main thing is there was a lot of bloodshed over tea at this point. And there was a Scotsman who was kicking around, who's a botanist, and he's like, oh, those English, have they heard of botany? It could really solve all of their problems. And I'm Scottish and very practical, and also the English have been occupying us for a long time. So we've learned how to work with them, or through them, or under them, or, you know, around them, whatever we have to do. We sort of convince them that we're helping them, but we may not be. And he was like, I think tea can grow in India as well, because tea does well in a mountainous climate. It does well with some altitude. It needs some rain, but you don't want to be too nice to tea. It's like wine. You should torture it a little bit to enhance the flavor. You should not be too nice to your tea, but it takes a long time to grow that tea bush. And so Mr. Fortune, Scotsman and botanist, wasn't necessarily speaking to the people of India very much about it. He hadn't learned the masala chai lesson that I taught all of you. He was like, I just think this will happen. We own India, we invaded and colonized that place too. I'm just going to sneak into China, steal a tea bush from China, whilst pretending to be Chinese, should work. I'm Scottish, I'm certain I can pass. I'm going to hire some local people to help me backpack through the Himalayas, as you do, with tea bushes on their backs, not on my back. I pay them for this. We're gonna go over the Himalayas, back into India. I'm gonna go into Darjeeling, and I'm gonna plant tea there, because I think it'll grow really well. The Indian population will be so excited to discover I have brought them tea. The Indian population was sort of like, well, we could have made you a cup of chai. But you are deranged. So whatever you want to do seems great. And so Mr. Fortune goes into China through Shanghai, pretends to be Chinese, abducts a tea bush, goes over the mountains, lives. One of the tea bushes live, amazingly, in a backpack greenhouse on their backs. Madness, very steampunk, but actual history. They get to the border with the whole like official bureaucracy there who's like, we've got to check your luggage for any sharp objects or explosives. And what's that bush? And they're like, it's just a tea bush. And they're like, I don't know, disbelieve. So customs agents actually killed several bushes in this process. And Mr. Fortune's like, come on, man. I pretended to be Chinese. I avoided capture and torture and death to abduct a tea bush, and this is the thanks I get. And they're like, we're customs agents, not botanists. What do you expect from us? We're here to get more money. And so they do manage to get a bush into Darjeeling, and Mr. Fortune starts the first plantation of tea in Darjeeling. And then, surprise, surprise, he meets his good chum, another Scotsman, Mr. Lipton. And Lipton's like, hey, I am a grocer in Glasgow. And what I think would be great is to make tea a lot more available to more poor people, because it shouldn't just be the aristocracy having tea. I would like to democratize tea and make it more affordable for everyone, because everyone deserves a good cup of tea. Oh, that altruist Mr. Lipton. And so he went into a business arrangement with Mr. Fortune to create the first tea plantations in Darjeeling and to start the Lipton Tea Empire through the purpose of abducted, kidnapped tea bushes from China, which became the original Darjeeling tea in Darjeeling, India. So tea from Darjeeling is secretly tea from China, which is a thing you now know. And the tea that's indigenous to India is Assam and Nilgiri. And all along, Mr. Fortune was like, why talk to the people of India? Why be rational when I can pretend to be Chinese and sneak into China and almost be murdered by the emperor for my audacity? So today we get most of our tea from India and China, and Darjeeling is considered to be the champagne of teas. But it's my favorite because it has the most notorious history, because it was kidnapped from China, and it's so absurd, it's hard to believe that that is the facts of the matter. But here we are today, drinking tea that was abducted from India, or from China, I love it. It's so delicious. It's a wonderful tea. But also, Assam is very lovely, very charming tea. And it's like, listen, I was the OG over here. I'm really unloved and I deserve attention too. Have you tried chai? So that brings us to modern times and modern tea world. There's a whole extensive experience of tea shenanigans in modern times too, and all sorts of ridiculousness that occurs, including a tea cult, which you may ask me about any time, because I'm very happy to speak to you of Celestial Seasonings, the actual tea cult created by actual cultists who believe that there were like alien beings that came to Earth of a whole range of colors. I guess we're talking about, we have 2 minutes. And they were like, well, depending on where you are at on the color spectrum, you're good or bad. And it just turns out people who are made out of white light are good. Not racism, not us, not a cult. We would never be racist. But the people of the darkest light are very bad. So it's a racist tea cult. I personally don't drink Celestial Seasonings. You can do what you want. It is only a tea saying. There's not even really any tea in it, so. They're secretly just a tea saying cult anyway. Yeah. So, we have a couple of minutes if you have any questions after that lively sort of jaunt through history of tea. Also, it's a jaunt through colonialism, expansion, and the British Empire. Yes.
I hear there was a tea party in Boston.
Oh, yeah, no, you know the colonials, right? England really, we're very proactive. And we like to go places and we'd be like, ooh, it seems nice. We're going to collect you like Pokemon. And the places were like, but we don't want to be collected. We already have people. And they're like, oh, pish posh, we've got a flag. And they were like, what has that got to do with anything? Well, we're English. It has everything to do with it. And so they sent some colonists, right? And they're like, ooh, colonists, we sent you. But the king has been making plans again and forgot to fund them properly, and so we need more taxes. But you know how it is. The colonists were like, you're a servant of the people. We're not your serfs. And he was like, oh, that sort of did go poorly with an ancestor. But I don't think you'll behead me. And they're like, want to try? We're sending you your team back. Taxation without representation. Do I have to outlaw tea as well? My goodness, they get hopped up on tea and they're like, no! Probably syphilis and booze! I don't know, it's the new world! We made bad choices! It wasn't the tea this time. It's like, all right, we'll go to war. But yeah, they dumped a lot of tea in the harbor. It was not black tea. It was not loose leaf tea. It was probably bricks of green tea. Fortunately, it was unlikely that it was fermented tea with horse sweat. So, small mercies. But in the olden days of the 18th century, tea was often exported in bricks because it traveled better. You could stack it like Legos of tea in the ship holds. They also, because tea is so lightweight but copious, they were like, ooh, our boats are too light but very full. So they're like, what if we take China from China and we stuff it around the tea and then we can sell people cups when we sell them their Lego bricks of tea? And people are like, oh, I'm thirsty, nice cup. And then people are like, ooh, nice job. We like this whole China thing, it's very pretty. Oh, it's from China, how nice, how apt, how on the nose. So yes, yes, madam.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think teas like Lipton tea and Red Rose that you get are crummy teas.
Well, they are now.
Yeah, but where would you recommend getting high quality teas?
Do you live here?
I live in Phoenix right now.
Well, I don't know the Phoenix area very well, but here in town, in Tucson, we have Seven Cups Tea, which is one of the best tea houses in the country, actually. Mm-hmm. Why they're here is a long story. You'll have to ask Xu Ping. It's not mine to tell, of course, but love is involved. And romance and happy endings, so it's not a bad story. But Seven Cups is an amazing Chinese tea house. They have a lot of education there. Excellent quality tea. So that's the main place I would recommend. Otherwise, the internet is your friend. There are a lot of fine, small, independent tea makers, blenders, producers on there. You can order from them. I like Tea Pump Teas. I have a professional relationship with them and we're friends. I also like Friday afternoon teas. They're very charming, very geeky. You've mentioned Tucson Teas, wonderful. So there are a few places like that you can order from online. Yeah. Any other questions? Are you stunned and overwhelmed? What is the one lesson you are supposed to take from this panel today?
Massage
time!
Don't go on the Rideau River.
Thank you. Thank you. Every time I cross the Rideau River, I die a little inside. And like, we came in here, we brought English. We colonized the place after being colonized by other people colonizing. And we can't even respect the Rito! It's just a Rito! But you know, I'm a linguist, so sometimes I get het up. Just masala chai. Any other questions? All right, go forth, do good, be kind, take care of yourselves, wash your hands. Drink the good tea. And remember, it's masala chai. All right, I love you all. And all in 50 minutes, woo!
Thank you for listening to the Creative Playin' Podcast Network. If you enjoyed our show, please check out D&D Journey of the 5th Edition and Ragnarok Enroll a Scion Hero to Ragnarok Story. Also, check out our Patreon page for more content and behind-the-scenes things, as well as joining us for a one-shot game or two.